Good morning. Today's daf and Baba Kama Tzadi Test. We're on Tzadi Ches Amud Beis. We are not at the Mishnah, but we are a third of the way down on the Amud. We're going to be starting with Chametz Vavalav HaPesach HaMelecha HaReisho Chalef Anecha. You steal an item, you return the item. Okay, that's one of the themes here in the ninth paragraph of the Masechta, but you steal an item and the item underwent a change. So Mamish, if it's a shinui, if it's a physical change, you've acquired the item and now you have to make restitution on the value of the item. However, what if it's not a physical change in the item, but the item now halakhically has changed such that the item has zero value? The item becomes asr, the item becomes asr b'achila, the item becomes asr b'hana. So now it has no value. Can I just simply go back and say, look, I'm really sorry, I apologize, I stole, I'm returning the item, here it is. Oh, by the way, it's chamish avalav pesach. It doesn't have any value to it. Okay, obviously he won't be happy, obviously. But nevertheless, though, can you at least wipe your hands and say, okay, I did the mitzvah of Hashavas Hagzela. I stole the item, I returned the item. Can I say now I fulfilled the mitzvah of Beheshev Es Hagzela? So Amisha said yes. Amisha said pretty clearly, pretty unequivocally, it says yes. So that's the that's what we're sending over here, the heading of our Mishnah. We're on Sa'ari Ches Amud Beis. So you're right at the two dots. The line starts with Agbe Beki Kishur Latsama. So Chametz Vavalav HaPesach HaMelecha HaReisho Chalef Anecha Mantana Omrim BeYisuri Hana'a HaReisho Chalef Anecha. So this idea that I'm returning something now that's Asur BeHana, and yet I could say HaReisho Chalef Anecha. Here it is. So Amar Rav Chista Rabbi Yaakovi. So Rav Chista tells us that it's the Tana Rabbi Yaakov. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa Shor Shehem is Ashelo Nigmar Dino Mecharo Machor Higdisho Mukdash Shchato Basar Mutter Hechziru Sharmer Labalav Mukzer. Okay, so you have a shor that was entrusted to you, and or even if it wasn't entrusted to you, in other words, but it killed. So at this point in time, is it a commodity that you could sell, that you could be makdish? That the bus is going to be mutter if you shechted? The answer to all of the above is yes. And if you were entrusted with it, so then if you return it to the owner, so it's mukhsar, so it's as if it's returned. Misha nikmardino, however, after the gmardin, so that means to say that this shore killed somebody and already went to Beis Din, and Beis Din paskin that it's that's a shore and iskal. So under those circumstances, in a machor, in a machor, mehikdicho, in a mukdash, Shchato b'sara aser. So at this point in time, that it has zero value. You cannot sell it. You can't be makdish it. You can't. You can't return it. Hechziru shama labalav ena muchzar. Was entrusted to somebody, and while under his care, the item killed and was paskin by Beis Din. So at that point in time, now you can't return it and simply say, "I return the item that was entrusted to me." And Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Af Mishnah Gemardino, Echziru Shom Labalav Muchzar. And Shitas Rabbi Yaakov is that even after the Gemar Din, you can still go ahead and you can return it. Yeah. So what do we see in this price over here? Very clearly, according to Rabbi Yaakov, once something is reduced to an Isser Hana'a, where it has zero value, nevertheless, by you returning to the owner, so you did Hashava, you return the item, even though the item is at zero value. And that's the same author of our Mishnah. So my love, Bahakamithlagi. Now the Gemara is going to spend just a moment going over. There obviously in the Brice is a machlokus between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yaakov. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Yaakov Savram Dem Omerim Bisuran Harisha Khalafanecha Rabban Savrain Omerim Bisuran Hanar Harisha Khalafanecha. And presumably the Nakud Hamachlokus between Rabbi Yaakov and the Chachamim is this very issue. When I return something that now has no value, does that qualify as a hashava? Yes or no? According to the Tana Kama, it does not qualify as a hashava. And according to Rabbi Yaakov, it does. That presumably is a machlokus. Amalei Rabbi Lo Dekulei Amar Amin Abisareina Arisha Cholafanecha. And Rabbi says to Rav Chista, no, that is not the Nekuda machlokus, because the Imkein Nifgu Bechametz BePesach. If in fact that was a machlokus, so why not have it? Going on something like, for example, Chametz BePesach. Chametz BePesach is such a perfect example because there's no other factors that are involved. Meaning Chametz on Pesach. What do you need? You need Chametz and you need Pesach. That's all you need. And meaning, and once you're holding on to Chametz, and once Pesach comes and goes, and you know, so to say, runs over the chametz. So now, immediately after Pesach, it's chamesh avar alav haPesach, and it's aser b'achil, it's aser b'hana. That would have been the model example. If all we wanted to do was litigate whether or not something with this or not can or cannot be returned. But over here, we're talking about a shor haniskal. Why are we giving such a strange example? Because there's another factor that's involved. According to the Tanakhama, you can't go through a Gemar Din. You can't. In other words, what happened? I handed over my animal to a shomer. While entrusted by the shomer, the animal went ahead and killed somebody. Obviously now, the shomer did not do his job of shmira well. Okay, but aside from that, now what? Now the shomer handed over the animal to Beis Din, go ahead and paskin. So according to the Tanakhama, what the owner could say is, you shouldn't have done that. What should you have done? You should have taken my animal and hid it somewhere in the swamp. Now, this is not the first time in the Masech that we're hearing such an argument. The first time we said it, now even the second time we're saying it, it is a funny argument. Meaning, what could I have done with the animal? Meaning, had the animal not been by you, the shomer, had the animal been by me, you know what I've done? I would have complicated the whole matter. Okay, in other words, it's the reality of legalities, which is it's the reality of legalities, which is that the courts are complicated, and I can make it more complicated. And so, what I could have done is I could have taken the animal, put it in the agam, and now we would have to retrieve from the agam. I could just simply complicate the whole matter. In other words, I could have done. There's something I could have done. But now it's by you, and you just hand it over to the Beis Din. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. So according to the Tanakhama, so you cannot paskin on the animal without the presence of the owner. And that's why the animal is never going to arrive at the point of the Gemar Din, according to the Tanakhama. And Rabbi Yaakov Savar, Gomrim Dino Shol Shor Shalom Befanov, Amrlei Mai Avdilei, Sof Sof Havi Gamrlei Dina Shalom Befanov. And according to Rabbi Yaakov, no. In other words, the animal killed somebody. The animal's going to be taken to Beis Din with or without the owner. And over here, sof, meaning Rabbi Yaakov will tell you, look, I don't care how much you complicate it. When all said and done, your animal killed, your animal's going to be brought to Beis Din. Right? That's what's going to happen. So it can be done with or without the owner. Okay, so we just offered another pshat in the machlokas between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yaakov. And so therefore, it could very well be that they're not arguing over the issue of returning Isuri Hana. Ashkeche Rav Chisla Rav Bar Shmuel Amarlei Tanisi Midi Be Isuri Hana. So, right, do you have anything to say regarding Isuri Hana? Right, let's talk and learning. In Tanini, yep, I have something to say regarding it. Veheshev is Exela Matamal Amar Asher Gazal Yachzir Kein Shigazal Mikan Amar Gazal Matbea Venefsa Peres Veyakiva Yain Veyichem Instrumal Venitmes. Chametz v'avar lava pesach behema v'nevda ba'avera v'shor ashelo nigmar dino omer la harei shochal lafanecha. Okay, so an assortment of Isuri Hana, and I know I read it quickly and I'm not going to explain each one of them, an assortment of examples of Isuri Hana in which if somebody says I stole it and then, not I said, if somebody stole it and then after having stolen it, it is reduced to an Isur Hana and now you return it. And any one of the above examples that we just went through, so Haresha Cholafanecha, I get to say, look, this is what I stole. I'm returning it as it is. Ah, it's Isur Hana. Okay. I know you're not going to be happy with me. I know, right? This is not going to really put us on the best footing with one another. But nevertheless, I fulfilled the pasuk of the Heishiv Hasegzela. So Mansha Malei Dama Ashlo Nigmar Dino in Mishnigmar Dino Lo Rabbanan. Now, reading that brisa carefully, which we didn't really do, but reading the brisa carefully, so one of the examples, the last example that was given was a shor haniskal before the Gemar Din. Now, who makes the distinction between before the Gemar Din and after the Gemar Din? That is the Tanakhama of the brisa. Right? Good. And on top of that, what's also included in the list of examples of Isuri Hana? Chametz bePesach. Ketani chametz v'avalav haPesach, Amar la harisha chalafanecha. So what do you see over here? You see that we are now equating in this brisa a short niskal before the Gemar Din, and chametz bePesach, and so therefore the pshat that was just offered by Rav Chista, the pshat that was just offered by Rav Chista is not a correct pshat. It's not a correct pshat. In other words, he wanted to make a distinction between the two cases, and clearly in this price over here, there's no distinction to be made. So Amalei Mishkachas Lulotem Luvalamidi. So Rav Chista says back that if you find the if the Bnei HaYeshiva find you, so do me a favor, don't share this price, because this price really does not go well with the pshat that I just offered. And this is an awkward line of the Gemara, an uncomfortable line of the Gemara. Basically, he's like, look, right, I'm trying to make an argument over here. The brisa doesn't support my argument. Do me a favor, don't introduce a brisa, right? It's not normal. Normally, what we find throughout Shas is that they were just interested in arriving at the honest truth, right? And either the brisa supports it, doesn't support, the Mishnah supports it, doesn't support, and let the chips fall where they are. We don't usually, rarely do we find, in other words, suppressing evidence and I'm asking you not to share this with the Bnei HaYeshiva. We don't find it that often over here, so we find it, and it's an uncomfortable line of the Gemara. I'm not really sure how to process it, but okay. I know everyone here appreciates the honesty, but nevertheless, we move on. Okay, Peres v'Yakiva Amala Harisha Cholafanecha V'Aznan Peres v'Yakiva Meshalim Kishasek Zela. Okay, so you steal fruit in a rot. So the Mishnah told us that you just simply return the fruits. Let's do that again. Let's do that better. So our Mishnah tells us Peres v'Yakiva. That's a physical change in the item. You've acquired the fruit through the shinui, through the physical change. And so therefore, if you want to make good on the gzela, you have to pay for the fruits. Sorry. Okay, that's our Mishnah. Meanwhile, the Gemara points out that we have a braisa. Peres v'Yakiva omer lo harisha chalafanecha. That the fruit rots, I could just return it. That's the braisa, obviously going against our Mishnah. So v'hatanan peres v'Yakiva masham kishasek gzela amar rapapa kanchi Yakiva kulon. Kanchi Yakiva miksasan. So rapapa says, I'm going to be miyashev. It's not a steer. They're talking about slightly different cases. I'm just talking about full rotting. The fruit have totally rotted, every one of them. There, you are koneh with shinui. There, you have to pay. On the other hand, if it's just partially rotting, so that is not considered a shinui, and there you could just simply return the fruit. Some of them have rotted. That's okay. Hareisho
cholafanecha. By chumetz v'pesach, can you return it? In the middle of Pesach,
then you run into a whole series of problems. And meaning, there's an issue of ownership on Pesach. So it's just complicated by the fact that there are additional issues. Okay, maybe. Okay. All right, Adkan. That's Sadi Chesam and Beis. That's not the end of it, but basically what I wanted to get to yesterday. Good. Now we're here at the Mishnah. Mishnah begins, Nasan Lumnin Lasakin, Vikilkulu, Chayav Lashalim. So over here now, a slight shift in topic here in the ninth parak of Baba Kama, and that is that I give it to a worker to work on. I give something, an item, to my craftsman, to my carpenter, to my jewelry maker, and what does he do? So he doesn't comply with the instructions that I gave him. And now we're going to be talking about what his liability is. In the event that he doesn't comply, he messes up. So let's see the Mishnah. So nasan leumne lesakein v'kilkulu chayav l'shalem. So if I give it to a craftsman in order to do it, and he's mekalkel and he ruins it, so he has to pay. Okay, so far so good. It sounds pretty reasonable. What are the issues over here? Let's see together. So nasan lecharash shida teva umegdal lesakein v'kilkulu chayav l'shalem. So let's say I go to a carpenter and I give him I want him to make an ark, a chest, and what does he do? He destroys. So chayv l'shalem. Now, what did I give him? Please wait. In other words, the Gemara is going to be discussing this very issue of what exactly I provided for him. Habanai shekibal alav listoras as a kos of a shiber avanim oshi zikin chayv l'shalem. So let's say you have a builder. Right, a GC, and what I asked him to do is I ask him to take down the wall, one particular wall. And while taking down the wall, what does he do? So he destroys the stones, meaning I just simply want him to dismantle the wall. And while doing so, he breaks the stones, which I didn't ask him to do. Oshi hizika and chayv l'shalem. Or, alternatively, he damages. So he's going to have to pay. So, haya sosa mitzad zevenafa mitzad acher pater. Now, if while deconstructing on one side, and the other side of the wall falls, so he's going to be pater, v'im machmas amake chayv, but if it comes as a direct result of the banging, so he's going to be chayv. Okay. Not exactly clear what the scenario over here is, but I get the general idea that it's grama versus nezik b'adayim, meaning that if he's working on one side of the wall and then from a grama standpoint the other side falls, so he's pater because grama minizakin is pater. On the other hand, if you see that while working on one side, the other side falls while working on that side, it's no longer grama, it's now nezik b'adayim, and therefore he's going to be chayiv. Good. I'm Rav Asi. Here we get to now basically today's topic, today's daf topic. Lo shanu ela nasan lecharshi de tevo migdal linots by mismar vinots by mismar v'shibran. Okay, our Mishnah. When I gave the carpenter a chest that I wanted him to build, so what did I give him? So Rav Asi says that our Mishnah is talking about where you gave him a chest, and what did it need? It just needed a couple screws. In other words, a couple screws are out. I wanted him to tighten it. In other words, I want him to reinforce it, and then he broke it. And then he broke it. And now he's got to pay for it. Aval. However, says Rav Asi, Nasan l'cher sheitzen laso shita tevo migdal v'asamem, man shita tevo migdal. But let's say what I did is I gave him the wood. And with the wood now, he constructs. He makes. He creates. So now, Shibron, if he breaks it, Pater, he will be exempt. So my time, Oman Kona b'shvachli. Now, when we're talking about exemption over here, we're talking about exemption from paying for the chest in full. Okay? Just to throw out numbers, just so we could see this a little more clearly, a little more illustrated. The wood that I gave him, let's say, cost $20. The constructed teva will cost $100. Okay? So, and obviously, by the way, his time is also valuable, and you're going to be paying him for his time and for his expertise. Okay? So now, what Rav Asi is telling us is the following. I gave him wood of $20. He goes ahead and he makes sheet of tape of migdal. He makes the kli that I asked him to make, which is now valued at $100. So Rav Asi will tell you that under those circumstances, if he goes ahead and breaks it while trying to construct it, so the only thing he needs to give you back is the wood of $20. That's it. He does not have to pay you for sheet of tape of migdal that he broke. Why? So Rav Asi says because uman kone b'shvach kli. That what the Uman has acquired is he's acquired the improvement of the item. When you contract to somebody to make something for you, so the way Rav Asi sees it is the following, and that is that as he's making it, so he's acquired, meaning it belongs to him. But what you contracted with him is that he will sell it to you. That's the way Rav Asi will see contractual labor, is that he acquired it. But what included in that contract is that he is going to in fact sell it to you. But it means, however, that prior to that point in time, it belongs to him. Okay. That's the yesod of Rav Asi. This is what's called uman kona b'shvach kli. It goes without saying that there, from a lambda standpoint, there is so much to discuss over here, but we are going to take it from a cursory look. We're just going to see it from the perspective of the Gemara. And obviously, we're just going to scratch the surface on this topic. Okay. The first thing the Gemara is going to do is, am I able to see that within the Mishnah? So that's the first thing the Gemara is going to do tonight. So let's take a look at our Mishnah. I give something to the craftsman in order to make. So, and he breaks it, he's going to have to pay for it. So my love, the Ivlay hates him. So the Gemara says like this, must be. Now, what was the Mishnah talking about? What was the case of the Mishnah? I gave the guy wood. So, lo, shita tevo migdal. No, the Gemara says, no, that's not the case of the Mishnah. And obviously, according to Rav Asi, you want to avoid that. Because if that were, in fact, the case of the Mishnah, where you gave him wood, so then the Mishnah wouldn't be making sense. Because what did the Mishnah say? Chayavin, you have to pay for the full value. Well, and then, according to Rav Asi, no, you don't. according to Rav Asi, that shevach belonged to you. You don't have to pay for the full value. The only thing you have to return is just simply the wood, the raw material, and that's it. So what Rav Asi would like to do is he would like to avoid that pshat. He, in fact, he does. Lo, shita tevo migdal. The case of the Mishnah is that what did I give to the Uman? I gave him already something that was finished. I gave him a kli. And what I wanted him to do was, a couple more screws in, a little reinforcement, whatever. So, Hamid Diktani Seifa, Shita Teva Migdal, Mechlal Dereisha, Eitzim. Yeah, but look at the totality of the Mishnah. Follow the Mishnah in full. The Mishnah starts off by making a general point, and then the Mishnah talks about Shita Teva Migdal. So, it sounds like Mechlal Dereisha, Eitzim. Well, if I look at the Mishnah and see it as two different statements of the Mishnah, and the second one is where I handed him Shita Teva Migdal, the first one is where I handed him raw wood. Amre Perusha Kamefarish La Ketsa Nasan Lomin Lasakim Vekukul Lachayim Lashalem Kigon Shenasan Lachara Shita Teva Migdal. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what you can do? You can understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives you a general statement, followed then by an explanation. It's not a new case in the Mishnah. It's Perusha Kamefarish. Hachinami Mestabra, the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, really, it makes sense. The Ketsad Katani. Because it says in the Mishnah Ketzad, that usually means, let me give you an example. And Isak Adach HaReisham, Eitzim. And not only that, by the way, but let's make the following argument. In your world, where in the first case of the Mishnah, was talking about Eitzim. So, Hashtah Shmin and Eitzim Chayav L'Shalem. Lo Armin and Uman Kona B'Shvakli, Shida Tevo Migdal Mibaye. And look, if you're right, that the first case of the Mishnah is Eitzim. And you're telling me that in that case over there, the human's got to pay for the finished product. If that were true, so then the next case of the Mishnah would be absolutely superfluous. Because if the human would have to pay in the case where the only thing that was given to him was Eitzim, and he still has to pay for the full kli, then for sure if what was given to him was a finished product, then and he broke it, he would have to pay for the full thing. Meaning, and then the second case of the Mishnah is absolutely unnecessary. So, imishim halo irya. The Gemara says, look, if all you have is just simply that argument by itself is not enough. Because Tana Sefer, Lugluya Resha, Lo Tama Resha, Teva Migdal, Shita Teva Migdal, Aval Eitzim Lo. So, Tana Sefer, Shita Teva Migdal, Mechlal De Resha, Eitzim Vafil HaChichayv L'Shalem. It could just simply be that the Sefer of the Mishnah is just telling us that the Resha is not talking about Shita Teva Migdal. So if all you have is just the construct argument of the Mishnah, that by itself is insufficient. Okay, so from our Mishnah, it is not conclusive whether or not Rav Asi is right or wrong. Let's reset. According to Rav Asi, when I go over to a craftsman and I ask him to make something for me, and I hand them the raw material, any improvement that he made, and of course he made improvement, in other words, that's why he gave it to him. Any improvement that he made, he acquired it, umin kone b'shvakli, and then when he hands it back to you, he's really selling it to you. Okay. Good. That is how Rav Asi sees the process of handing raw material over to an Uman, and when he returns it to you, he's actually selling it to you. Good. This is what's called Uman Kona B'Shvakli. In our Mishnah, is it clear? No. But it's not clear the other way around either. From our Mishnah, we do not have proof one way or another. Lema Misayele. So the Gemara says, okay. So from our Mishnah we don't have, but what about tomorrow's daf? In tomorrow's daf, we have a Mishnah. No, since Emerlet Saba, I give wool to the dyer. I want him to dye. The wool right now I'm giving it to him is white or gray. And I want it to be red. And now, v'higdichu yore. No, sin lo demet simro. So now what happens is that the dyer puts it into his pot of boiling water and colors. And when placing the wool into the pot, so now what does he do? The heat was on too high. And what he did is he burnt your wool. Okay, fine. He burnt your wool. So what does he have to do? Replace. Give you new wool. But now we're going to be medayik in the Mishnah. This is tomorrow's daf. So so the Gemara says, now what he doesn't have to do is he doesn't have to give you the shevach. He doesn't have to return the shevach, meaning that once it's dyed, had it been dyed correctly, it would have increased in price, obviously. And now what the dyer does not have to do is not have to pay for the shevach. He only has to pay for the raw wool. Now, so far so good. The diuk is a solid diuk. Here's now what's the sticky part. When did it get burnt? Before the wool absorbed the dye or after? Ah. So my love, I added a word, didn't I? Sure. Lav sheikdichu lachar nefila, de'ika shevcha, ushma mina umen kona b'shvachli. So now let's speculate. Here's what happened. The wool went into the pot. It collected the dye. And then afterwards it got burnt. And yet the Mishnah tells us, what does the dyer have to do? Only pay for the raw material. What about the shevach? The tzaba, the dyer, owns the shevach, and that's why he doesn't have to pay for it. Good. If we're right, it's a slam dunk raya for Ravasi. But of course, I'm a Shmuel, hachma maizkinen, kigon sheitichu b'shas nefila, deleka shevcha. Shmuel can tell you, we'll tell you that, nah. In other words, what happened was is that it got burnt right away. Before the wool collected the dye, it burnt at that point in time. There was no shevach. So va'agdichu l'achar nefila mai, no solo to make simmer v'shevcho, le'ma Shmuel le'is le'de Ravasi. So the Gemara says, okay, now the way Shmuel's reading the Mishnah comes out now that had there been Shevach, so then the Tzava would have to pay for the Shevach. And if in fact that's true, that means that Shmuel is against Ravasi. And as Rashi points out over here, if Shmuel's against Ravasi, that's, aside from that being not good news for Ravasi, the Halacha would then follow like Shmuel, because we know that this is a Dine Mamonos issue, and by Dine Mamonos we follow Shmuel. So Amalecha Shmuel Hacha B'maiskinan Kigon Detzemer Samanim De'Balabayis. So what Shmuel will tell you is that now, maybe what happened over here is the following, is that what did the wool owner provide? He provided wool and he provided the dyes as well. And so under those circumstances now, the only thing that the dye is getting paid for is just simply services. But in other words, the dye that was added did not belong to him. So the Gemara says, and then how should the Mishnah read? The Mishnah should read that when the wool gets burnt, so what does he have to reimburse? He has to reimburse wool and he has to reimburse dye. If in fact Shmuel's right in his reading of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, no. All Shmuel was doing was just simply pushing off the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah seems to support Ravasi. And what Shmuel's saying is, yeah, but you don't have to read the Mishnah that way. Shmuel's not saying my way of reading the Mishnah is absolutely correct. It's just simply saying that you don't have to read the Mishnah in the manner that would be an absolute support for Ravasi. The Mishnah is open to possibilities. And so therefore, that's all that's happening in the Mishnah. It's just a pushing off of the Raya. But we're not saying that Shmuel knows for sure that his version of the Mishnah, his interpretation of the Mishnah, is in fact correct. Okay. Tashma. Again, what's our issue today? Umen kona b'shvachli. When a craftsman works on an item, improves the item, so that improvement, that shevach, who's the owner of it? So according to Ravasi, the woman's the owner of it. Okay. And we are now trying to support whether or not this is in fact correct or not.
Have you prepaid him for his work?
No. You're paying him when it's over. Okay. So now that payment is it really going to be viewed in one of two different ways.
Like a salary.
It's either going to be now, right, the contracted payment for the work that he put in, or it's going to be a sale. Rav Asi is telling you that it's a sale. It's a sale. So Tashma, no sin talisa loman, gam rav odi afilu mikan v'adasar yamim eino over alav mishum lo salim. However, when you have a daily worker working for you, so you have to pay them by the end of the day. The truth of the matter is that's imprecise. In Bab Mitzia, we're going to be talking about a lot about workers' payment. You have the entire night to pay, right? That the following night to pay, and if you have a nighttime worker, you have the following day to pay. In other words, but you have to pay by that point in time. Okay. So the employer, are on the clock in terms of your deadline to pay your worker. Good. However, what if it is not service, but let's say it is an uman, a craftsman, a contractor. And what I did is I gave him something to do, and he finished it, and now he's holding on to it. He's holding on to it for 10 days. So you are not in... you are not past due on payment. You are still good in terms of being within an acceptable time. In other words, you have absolutely no obligation to pay him at this point in time. However, once he returns it to you, he gave it to you somewhere in the middle of the day. Once Shkias HaChama has come, so now over La Mishum Baal Talin. So at that point in time, now you're in violation of Baal Talin. Okay. He quotes over here the Rashash in terms of the precise Isser that one violated. Right, the Rashash says it's not exactly Baal Talin. Anyway, but let's just keep to the basic point of the Gemara, and that is that what are we seeing clearly over here? So the Gemara says, now, if in fact this is a sale, so you're in violation of Baal Talin. Baal Talin is for workers. Right? The Gemara is now making what seems to be an outstanding point. Meaning this idea that I have a worker who worked for me, and now I have to pay him for the services. So that all is, if we're talking about paying for employment. But if we're contracting where I'm going to buy something from you, so good. So now, how do sales work? It's very simple. I sell you the item. Okay, you pay me for the item. Obviously, I'd like the money as soon as possible. But if, let's say, I'm not getting my money, the day that I sold it, I'm not getting the money a week later, a month later. Now, obviously, I will be aggravated and agitated. And there certainly is other issues to consider. But there is no Isser of Baal Talin. In other words, because this is not employment. This is a sale that occurred. And so the Gemara says, so I don't understand according to Rav Asi. So over here, once a craftsman returns it to you, and I delay in payment, so it doesn't make me a good person, but I'm not violating the Isser of Baal Talin. Okay. It seems like an outstanding point. So Amar Rav Mari, Bered Rav Kahana, Begarda Desarvala, Deleka Shavcha. So the Gemara gives answers now, that we're not talking about contracted labor, we're talking about actual employment. Right, the Gemara over here describes stamping on the wall, softening the wall. So so the Gemara says, okay, but stepping on the wall, isn't that contracted services? Meaning, what do I want to do? I want softer wall. So I give it to this guy, he's going to make it softer. How he makes it softer, it doesn't matter, I don't care. In other words, he's stepping on it, but I'm not paying him for stepping on it, I'm paying it for the better product that I'm going to get back. So it's a contract, and so therefore I don't understand how did you change anything? So lotzricha de agri lebicha bicha bicha b'masa dinus chirus. So the Gemara says no, I am not asking him to provide for me back a softer wool, although that is what's going to come back. I'm paying him for stamping. Every time he stamps down on the wall, I will pay him for that. It is employment. I am paying him for his services, not for the goods that come back in my direction. So the Gemara says, now, this brings us to a Rav Sheshes point, meaning, Rav Sheshes was asked this very question, meaning by contracting. So when I'm asking him to provide a product for me, so is there lo selling, yes or no? And Rav Sheshes says there is. So that means to say that must be the Rav Sheshes when looking at contracted work, where I'm asking him to come back to me with a better product. So Rav Sheshes is telling me that if I delay in payment, I am violating lo selling. So lema de Rav Sheshes, pliga de Rav Asi. So the Gemara says, okay. So from Rav Sheshes' answer, I can tell you that he argues with Rav Asi, right? Because again, according to Rav Asi, when I contract and he hands me back the product, the item. So according to Rav Asi, is there lo selling? No, because that was a sale. That was a sale. And according to Rav Sheshes, did I violate lo selling? Yes. Why? Because it wasn't a sale. So Rav Sheshes and Rav Asi are at odds with one another. So Amar Shmuel Bar Acha b'shlicha de igrasa. So the Gemara says, nah. It could very well be that when Rav Sheshes was asked a question regarding delay payment for contracted service, we're not talking about contracting and making product, but we're talking about contracting services. Like, for example, right, UPS, FedEx. I don't want to take a side. So the I'm contracting for something like like a courier. We're there, in other words, even though it is a contract, but in other words, there's no shevach. All I want is to get the item from point A to point B. So there's absolutely no shevach. On such a situation, Rav Sheshet will tell you, oh, for that, once he does the services, and once you delay the payment, now you're in violation of lo salin. But if we're talking about goods, where he is now making something for me, and there is shevach in product, so under those circumstances, Rav Sheshet could very well be in line with Rav Asi. And that is, umen kone b'shvach kli, and when he gives it back to you, he is selling it to you. Okay, so, lema ketanai. So where are we now on this front? We're on Sadi Tesamad Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. Wishful thinking. We're two-thirds of the way down. And so all we've been doing today, well, we finished yesterday's daf, but all we've been doing today is litigating Rav Asi. It's the only thing we've been doing today. So again, according to Rav Asi, let's reset again. Rav Asi tells me that when I hand over something to an Oman to make, I give him the wood, and I'm asking him to make it. And obviously there's an improvement in it, and I will be buying it back from him. According to Rav Asi, that's exactly what just happened. I purchased it from him. He acquired it via the Shevach. And again, by the way, the subtleties of how much did he acquire? Did he acquire the whole thing? Meaning, right, I alluded to this earlier, and I said we're not going to speak about it, and we're not going to speak about it. But anyway, so, but he acquired it. He acquired the Shevach. And now when he gives it back to me, and I give him the money, that is a sale. That is Rav Asi's position of Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. And what we've been doing, the only thing we've been doing since the Mishnah, is litigating whether or not this is correct or this is not correct. Right? We have our Mishnah, we have a Braisa, we have a statement by Shmuel, we have a statement of Rav Sheshet, and the Gemara just filter through all these various positions, whether or not Rav Asi is a supportable position or an unsupportable position. Where do we stand right now? The Gemara has been defending Rav Asi valiantly, if I may add. Lema Kitanai. Okay, so the Gemara now would like to suggest that this position of Rav Asi really subject to a Machlokas Tanayim. In the following Asi Li Shirayim, a woman goes over to a man and says, look, interested in marriage and interested in you. Now, obviously, the woman's not proposing to the man, but she's making a proposal. And that is that, look, well, here's what I'll do. I'm going to give you the raw material. I'll give you some gold. I'll give you some silver. And what you are going to do is that you're going to fashion and create for me a ring. Obviously, the man over here is already a competent jeweler. He knows how to make rings. So the jewelers nowadays, by the way, is the middleman, right? Yeah. you're not going to the actual woman. So back in the day, so you're going to the craftsman himself. So she likes this guy and she wants to get married to him. And so what she does is she gives him the raw material and she says, okay, you'll make me a ring. Okay. And if you can make this more dramatic, I'd rather not. But in other words, then he'll give her the ring and, you know, it's not the engagement ring, by the way, because it's, in other words, it's mamash, the kesef kedushin. We're going to wrap our heads around that in just a moment. And good. And now, is she mekudeshes? It's a really simple question. So asali shirayim onizam v'tabaz v'akadesh l'cha. So kevin she'asan mekudeshes divrei Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir has a really interesting shita, almost impossible to understand, and that is when he finishes making the ring, the kedushin has occurred.
Is he agreement with this?
Huh? Of course. In other words, none of this works without agreement. Marriage does not work unless both parties are interested in marriage. Yeah, right. That's an obvious point, but I'm more than happy to clarify. Good. So so Rav Meir's position, nearly impossible to understand. When he finishes, the kedushin occurred. Now, why is it impossible to understand? Because we all know, right? We went through kedushin together. And that is, how do you affect kedushin? By handing her something of value. She gave him the raw material. He made a ring out of it. Of course, he put improvement in it. And whether or not he acquired the shevach or not, obviously that's the point we're about to litigate. But in other words, but if he didn't give her anything, so how has the kedushin been affected? Please wait. I'm right now just highlighting how difficult right now at this point it is to understand Rav Meir. And according to the chachamim, the kedushin does not occur until he hands her money. Okay. Now, my maman. Now, when the Chachamim said he has to hand her money, what does he mean by that? Ilem also mamon, are we talking about the ring that he fashioned? So mechlad rameir savra also mamon lo. Well, then that means that according to rameir, he doesn't even have to hand her that ring. So elabamai mikadusha. But that can't be. Because according to rameir, how do you affect kedushin if you don't give her anything? So elabshita, my mamon, mamon acher. Ah, so it must mean that according to the chachamim, mamon means other monies. He's got to give her other monies. Meaning the ring is not doing the kedushin. Oh, so in other words, it's great, by the way, that this courtship is going fantastic, and it's great that they're both interested in marriage, but in other words, by kedushin, you need something to effect the marriage. So what is going to affect the marriage? It's going to be the handing over of money, other monies that he's got to give her. Ah, fine. So now what comes out over here is as follows. So first of all, we're now at a better understanding of Reb Meir. In other words, according to Reb Meir, him finishing the ring is insufficient. What Reb Meir meant is that he finished the ring and he handed her the ring. And what Reb Meir meant is that with that, he's Mekadosh her. And now we also understand and know that according to the Chachamim, no, not yet. The ring by itself is not going to affect the Kedushin for reasons we're going to articulate. Rather, in other words, you want to affect Kedushin? Look good. Look, what a beautiful courtship. And how lovely. He made for her a ring. But in other words, but that in of itself is not the Kesef Kedushin. It can't qualify as the Kesef Kedushin for reasons we're going to explain. You want now Kedushin to take effect? Go into your pocket and take out other monies. And hand her the other monies. And now Kedushin will be affected. Good. Now at least we now know what they're arguing about. Well, we know what the case is. But obviously now, the remainder of today's daf, the explanation. Why, according to Rameir, handing of the ring is sufficient, and why, according to the Chachamim, handing of the ring is insufficient. So, v'savruwa, dekuli ama yesh l'schirs mitchil v'yatzov. Now, I ask a worker to work for me, okay? And contracted labor, okay? So go ahead and paint my house, or whatever contracted labor, right? Make for me a pergola. So the... And now, obviously, there is his schiras. In other words, I got to pay him for the time that he put in labor. And how is that labor accrued? Is it accrued incrementally every time that he's working? Now, basically, money that I owe him, or ainu l'schiras ela b'sof? No, the labor bill is only due at the end. Okay, and again, this is a major debate that we're looking at right now. We're assuming, for purposes of presenting and framing the machlokas, we're assuming right now that everyone's of agreement. Labor accrues from when he starts working until when he ends. What happens at the end when he finishes the pergola? So you owe him labor. Now the labor that you owe him is going to be past due. Okay, but I'm not saying it in any kind of negative way. Obviously. You're not going to pay him for every hour that he works. Okay, here's another dollar. Here's another dollar. Obviously, you wait till the end. But in other words, but it's now past due. Now, udekuli ama. That's step number one. Step number two. Dekuli ama mekadosh b'milva ina mekudeshes. Can I be mekadosh with a loan? You cannot. You cannot be mekadosh with forgiveness of a loan. In the event that a woman owes you money and you say, "Hey, look," sorry, the other way around, right? She owes you money and you say, "Look," rather than paying me back, let's settle this a different way. I'll marry you. Why not? Okay. So does forgiveness of debt serve as a valid form of payment? It does not. Mikash b'mova ina mekudeshes. And Rashi over there in Kedushin said because milva lo tzanitna. When I give somebody a loan, the expectation is that money is going to be spent, and so therefore there's no money here. Okay, fine. And you have to be Mekadosher with a kesef. So, right. So step number one, Schirus is Mitchil V'Yatzof. Step number two, I'm Mekadosh B'Milva, Eina Mekudeshes. Good. My love, Omen Kona B'Shvachli, Kamir Filgi, the Rabbi Meir Savra, Omen Kona B'Shvachli, V'Rabban and Savra, Omen Kona B'Shvachli. And so now what's the only thing left on the table? She gave you the metal. She gave you the gold. She gave you the silver. You then, in fact, turned it into a ring. Obviously, improving its value significantly. Good. So that's Shevach. Who's the owner of that Shevach? Isn't that exactly now the machlokas between Rameir and the Chachamim? Rameir will tell you that the owner of the Shevach is the Uman. And so when he hands her the ring, so is he giving her something of value that he in fact owned? Yes. And therefore the condition takes effect. According to the Chachamim, the Uman is not Kone B'Shvach Kli. The Shevach does not belong to the Uman. It is not he doesn't view it as a sale. But rather the Shevach is owned by the one who contracted. And so therefore, when he hands her the ring, did he give her something of his? No. And therefore the Kedushin has not been affected. Okay. Beautiful. So this may in fact be the Machlokas between Rameir and the Chachamim. If in fact that's true, so then it comes out that Rav Asi is really caught between a Machlokas Tanayim. And you know what the Gemara is going to do, and that is, there are other ways to present the Machlokas. Obviously, remember, in order to set it up this way, we had to set our settings. Everyone holds this, and everyone holds this. And the only thing left for debating is Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli. And so now, obviously, what we could do is, wait one second. How about we're not arguing about Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli, and how about we're arguing on any of the other settings? And the Gemara is going to say exactly that. Lo. Kuli Amein Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli. Could very well be that, no, the Umen is not Kone B'Shvach Kli. Ela Hacha B'Yeshon L'Schiros Mitchila V'Yatzov Kemiflagi. And it's a question of how to look at labor that is whether it is accrued or whether it's only coming at the end. It's only due at the end. Rameir Savrein Liskiros Alabasov. According to Rameir, Schiros is only coming at the end. And so therefore, after he's finished, and obviously there's improvement, but there's also labor. And the payment for labor only is now due. And he could say to her, look, don't pay me for the labor right now. Keep it as your Kesef Kedushin. According to Rameir, perfect. And Rabbanan Savayesh L'Schiros Mitchel Aviyasov. And according to the Chachamim, no. Labor has been accrued over the course of time. At this point in time, it is now a loan past due. Okay. And so therefore, obviously, can't be Mekasher with that. That's another way to explain the Machlok. Because the Gemara says, Yibay Semedu Kulei Amma Yeshna L'Schiros Mitchel Aviyasov. V'hachem ben Mekasher ben Milvei Kemithlagi. Rabbi Meir Savar Mekasher ben Milvei Mekudeshes. V'Rabbanan Savar Mekasher ben Milvei Ina Mekudeshes. Alternatively, it could just simply be a function of whether or not one can be Mekash B'Milva. I know we start off by setting the setting at everyone holds that you can't be Mekash with a Milva, but maybe that's the point. That's exactly the point of the debate. Rav Amar, as we turn now to the top of the Amud Beis, Dikuli Amar Yesh L'Schiros Mitzchila V'Yatzof. Schiros, labor, accrues over time. Udikuli Amar Mekash B'Milva in the Mekudashas. And you can't be Mekash with a Milva. Udikuli Amar Yenom in Kona B'Shvach Kli. And everyone's of the position that the craftsman does not acquire the Shevach. It just happens to be that when the craftsman put that ring together, so what did he do? He took some of his own metal, or he took a jewel, and he added it to the ring. Now, Rabbi Meir Savar Milva Upruta. What is he handing her right now? He's handing her now the milva, because again, it's past due, so the ring, the labor, and the shevach he doesn't own. All that was past due, and so that all falls under the category of milva, and he's also handing her a pruta as well, as part and parcel of the ring. So daita a pruta, and according to Rameir, what is she focusing on right now? She's focusing on the pruta, and therefore the kedushin has been effected. And Rabbanan Savri, milva o pruta, daita a milva. And what the Chachamim will tell you is that no, even though he's handing her milva and pruta, what is she focusing on right now? She's focusing on the milva. Uplukta dahani tonight, just one more step for today. And that is the Tanya will learn to Bischarsha Sisi Machina Mukudeshes. Bischarsha Ese Mach Mukudeshes. So let's say he's going to provide services for her. If it's services that he already provided, too late. He can't be Mekadesh her with that, because it's already past due. If he says, I'm going to be Mekadesh with services that I will provide, so that would serve as Kedushin, because their services have value and it is not in the rear view mirror. Rabbi Nasan Omer Bischarsha Ase Imach in Mekudeshes V'Cholshekain Bischarsha Asisi Imach. And according to Rabbi Nasan, you cannot be Mekadesh a woman not for services that I already provided, nor for services that I will provide. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer Rabbi Amasam Rabbein Bischarsha Asisi Imach Bein Bischarsha Ase Imach in Mekudeshes V'im Hosef La Nofach Mishalom Mekudeshes. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So fundamentally agreeing with Rabbi Nasan, you can't be Mekadesh with services, not services that already were provided, not services that I will provide, but if I, in addition to services, I also add actual material as well, So then the kedushin is good. Now, bein Tanakama le Rabbi Nasan ikemenas chirus. Now, as far as the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Nasan, it's a question of how to look at schirus. Is schirus accrued over time, or is schirus only come due at the end? Rendering this payment now either satisfaction of a loan, or it's going to be payment that is provided right now. Good. And so we understand very clearly the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Nasan. And then Rabbi Nasan Rabbi Yehuda Nasi ikabeinau milva pruta. And then the difference between Rabbi Nasan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is going to be milva pruta. When you're handing her two things. Number one, satisfaction of debt and nofach mishalo. A payment in addition to that, an additional payment in addition to forgiveness of debt. And now the question of what is she focusing on? Is she focusing on the pruta? Is she focusing on the milva? That's the difference between the Tanakh, between Rabbi Nasan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Okay, perfect. It's a good place to stop. In fact, this is where we're going to stop. Tomorrow's daf happens to be physically just a shorter daf. So tomorrow, God willing, we'll be able to catch up. In the meantime, however, let's recap. Let's review what we did this morning. Our first big topic for today, finishing up yesterday's daf, was is that when something goes from having value to no value, zero value, meaning it becomes Isuri Hana, and I return the Isuri Hana, have I now satisfied the requirement of Veheshef as Exela Sher Gazal? So the Gemara, our Mishnah taught us, yes, you have fulfilled the requirement of Veheshef as Exela, even though it has zero value. Okay, the Gemara deliberated that point a little bit in the course of today's stuff, but that is the conclusion of the Gemara that took us to the end of yesterday. And then today, I give something to an Uman to make. He doesn't make, but rather he breaks. So he's got to pay for that which he broke. That's our Mishnah, in a nutshell. And from that point going forward, Rav Asi says, okay, but what if I give the Uman raw material, and with the raw material he made a kli, and then he breaks the kli. What does he have to pay me? According to Rav Asi, he just has to pay for the raw material. I, the shevach, the improvement, he is the owner of that shevach. What we agree to is that he's going to sell it to me, but he's the owner of the shevach. Uman kona b'shvach kli. That is the shita of Rav Asi. And in the course of today's daf, it was only one topic that we covered, and that is proving or disproving Rav Asi. The Gemara spent the entirety of today's daf. Well, the truth of the matter is, there's a lot more coming up, but the entirety of what we covered so far today as to whether or not Rav Asi is a supportable position or not a supportable position. And the Gemara still left it unresolved as to whether or not we have fully endorsed the position of Rav Asi.